Hey, welcome to the second episode of the still not named Sal Mena podcast. I'm your host, I'm Sal. Today, Corey Farner joins me, great friend of mine, and we got a lot of good stuff that we got into, especially if you've got kids and you're looking to get them into sports and, you know, are wondering about injuries and how to introduce them to the sport. Corey's got some great insight into that, and a lot of stories about when he was little and when we were little and how all the injuries mounted up, and you know, a lot of stuff from our childhood and maybe getting after me a little bit. I do want to thank everybody for listening to the first episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. I feel a lot better about this one than the first, and I promised you guys that they're only going to get better. So for now, let's do this. Joining me today is Corey Farner, great friend of mine. 29 years, is it?
Yep. It was great. I mean, we had a great childhood. You know, our neighborhood was full of kids, and you know, you and Sean were my best friends. You know, I mean, it was great. And it was cool because we all brought a little something to the table. You know, it was a little something different. And, you were hilarious. I mean, Sean... Picking on you, you know, I didn't see it as bullying and stuff like that. I mean, Sean, but looking back at it, it's like pretty cringeworthy stuff.
I mean, the coolest thing to me is looking back, and it's like, all right, we were 5 and 6 years old, and here we are, 30 some odd years later, and we're still talking and still hanging out, and I still have that rapport where if we go months or weeks or whatever without talking, you just jump right back in. And my favorite, Corey, was boxing in your basement.
I got a couple pairs of boxing gloves for Christmas 1 year, and it was mainly for me and my brothers to beat the crap out of each other.
But why not have everybody else have a little fight club? It was only fifth grade, whatever.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, we were trendsetters, man. We were doing fight clubs before the movie Fight Club.
But we don't talk about it.
No, nobody
so
talks about it.
We're going to have to edit that out.
Right. You know, it's just, so we got in the basement, you know, I had an open basement down there, and it was not the safest thing. There were weights and all kinds of dangers around if someone actually got knocked down.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I was into it. The funniest thing, man, It got real. Yeah, and you know what? You know, it's all fun and games until you take one in the mouth and you're like, all right, this is for real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I equate, you know, I'm crazy about The Simpsons. I equated the one time when Bart was swinging on Nelson and he finally got Nelson's nose to bleed. It was like, you made me bleed my own blood. So Sean might have got a shot in there, and then I just kind of forgot where we were for a minute, and maybe I was an innovator of MMA for a second too, because dude fell down and I still hopped right on top of him.
Well, I think we all had our issues with anger and being able to control it once the switch went off.
We probably got done getting our asses kicked and maddened by you or your dad, so there was some aggression to be taken out.
I tell you what, my dad, you know, he can still win. I mean, he plays games now with my son, and you know, he's still good at it. You know, he's a football coach, so once he kind of figured out the buttons, I think he's you know, he's probably got an advantage over all of us. You know,
just sitting there was great theater watching you and him play, and I could see how cool and calm he was while he was dealing out that thorough ass whooping. To watch you squirm in your chair and try to just figure out, like, what am I doing? How am I going to do this? How am I going to beat him? Knowing darn well it just wasn't going to happen. You were not getting over on him.
I used to get so pissed. It was unbelievable. I mean, we went through so many controllers, you know, for those systems that we had. Because just he would beat us and we would get so pissed and we would slam those things on the ground. He'd get all upset with us because... You know, that's another 30 or 40 bucks.
I'm sure you had to buy another one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just the way that it is. It's like, and a lot of times it was my allowance money or whatever money I saved up. You know, I had to buy it. But I don't know. I just couldn't stop throwing that thing. I was so irritated. Like, how does this guy who's 30 years older than me, who grew up, you know, on the back roads of Taylor, didn't even have a TV, and this guy is destroying me in my own video game.
So would you call that modern dad strength? Like, not only would he be able to, like, beat you up in a fight, but he can also beat you up in anything else you do?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a great point. I mean, I think one of the reasons, you know, why my personality kind of grew to what it was because of him. You know, like, he never kind of made it easy in terms of winning. You know, he's like, hey, when you can earn it, you'll win. He was like the Tom Brady of Madden football in 1993, you know?
Just using Montana.
Just using Montana or, you know, or back in the day when Tecmo Bowl, using Bo Jackson.
Oh, Bo, for sure, Bo. Yeah. Is it cheating using Bo and Tecmo? Because I didn't absolutely really play Super Tecmo. I always played original Tecmo, and I was a Walter Payton guy. I mean, that guy was just as brutal as Bo. And again, the Raiders, how do you beat them? Bo and Marcus Allen? It's not right.
Right.
It's not right.
No, it's not. It's a super team. It was, you know, that's why, I mean, the vast majority of the time that we played Super Tecmo Bowl was, we didn't use it. Nobody was allowed to use the Raiders.
Yeah, right. I remember that. Yep.
For that reason.
Yep, can't use it. Watching your dad and watching your dad picking up on his culture and stuff, you said he was a coach. What talk about that dynamic, because you were the single-handed most athletic kid that I still know. I mean, not only you excel, damn it, Corey, everything. we started playing tennis in college, and you're like, okay, I'll play, and you were whooping us. It's like, where does this kid come from? Why? What was that like? How did that come from your dad? Why were you so damn good at everything?
Well, I think part of that has to do with my dad, you know, being a coach. He coached football for 40 years, you know, from 8-year-olds all the way up to varsity in high school. So, you know, he had that coach's mentality where, you know, you're going to have to earn it and you got to have confidence in what you're doing. My dad was a good athlete growing up, you know, so I think genetically I got some of that athleticism, but I think the thing that translates to, you know, trying to be successful or being good at something, you know, while after just picking it up, comes down to your ability to control your body, you know, in space. And my dad, you know, being the football coach and stuff, he was out in the backyard with us all the time. You know, I was playing, you know, wiffle ball at 3 years old, you know. I mean, he was out there, you know, making sure that we had a lot of things to do, you know. And I think that kind of played a role in it because, I mean, the different movements that you learn in the different sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football, you know, tennis, whatever it is, some of that stuff can translate from sport to sport. And some things you got to be able to control your body to adjust. I was athletic, but one thing that I prided myself on was I was able to control my body in small movements. And that's what I kind of, you know, as a coach now, that's one of the big things and the philosophies I have is, if you can feel it, you can change it, you know, and never picked up a tennis racket before college, never had any interest in playing tennis whatsoever. And, you know, it's a competitive atmosphere. You know, I'm not, anytime I go play a game, I want to win, you know, so I have to kind of get in tune with, you know, what do I have to do? What does my body have to do to get this ball over this net and not hit it out of the, you know, over the fence, you know what I mean? That was a struggle, you know, because I wanted to crush this ball, you know, and there was quite a few times where the ball did go over the fence.
Well, your body, especially because your primary sport was baseball, and that's what you went to college, you played in college for baseball. Yeah. I mean, your body, it's conditioned to say, I'm going to smoke this ball as hard as I can. So I think there's something to that where if you train your body to say, this motion's got to be different here. You played quarterback too, so and you pitched. You know, a lot has been made, you know, about concussions and then youth injuries when it comes to them throwing versus pitching and how young they have to be before you know, how old they have to be before you start that. What were the difficulties that you saw, you personally, and between throwing a football, throwing a baseball, and then furthermore, throwing a curve, throwing a cutter, throwing a splitter, throwing a change? And what do you tell your kids now, and especially your parents, your kids' parents that you coach? What do you tell them about that?
Well, I mean, we know a lot more today than we did, you know, 30 years ago. And so, you know, when we grew up, it was old school. You know, you did it until you were successful. So there wasn't pitch counts.
You played football until you had to get your hip replaced because you were tackled on the sidewalk?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing was, are you hurt or are you injured?
Yeah.
If you're hurt, then get up and play the next play and quit crying. If you're injured, then we probably need to take you to the hospital, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of the mentality. I mean, we played through injuries. And really, I mean, that's think about our age now and the things that I've had to go through physically.
Yeah.
That mentality has played a role in that, you know. And I, like I said, I don't hold that against anybody. You know, we just didn't know as much as we know now.
No, and I think it's such a small world now too, where you can't turn on your phone without reading something about an injury. Someone overexerting themselves during summer practices at football and passing out and dying.
Right.
And, you know, it's an awful, awful thing. And you as a parent, as you get older, you start to become conscious of that. But I got to tell you again, so on top of being one of the best athlete, the best athlete that I've known, that I knew growing up for sure, you paid the price a little bit, you know, concussions, ACL, how many times?
Twice. Yeah. The laundry list is long, you know. The concussions, you know, at the time we didn't know a ton about it.
No, you had your bell rung. Get the salts.
Yeah, I mean, and if you think about youth football and all that stuff, I mean, I get migraines all the time, and so the doctors haven't been able to like say, hey, it's correlated to concussions, because you know that study and that information is still relatively new, and they're still, you know, obviously researching it. But you're saying that every time you got your bell rung, you know, it could possibly be a concussion. And I think back, I mean, I had 5 documented concussions growing up.
And I think that's important to say, that you say that documented, because how many times where, again, it's like, are you hurt or are you injured? Oh, you're hurt? Get
right
up.
Well, I can tell you right now that, I mean, I played weeks on end with headaches and didn't say anything, you know, and that's kind of how we were conditioned, you know, not by coaches necessarily, but just society. You know, you have to be tough. You know, and at the time, that's what I tried to do, you know. And I think of all the times I got my bell rang, just from the ages of 8 through, you know, 12 in youth football, you know, and those could possibly be concussions. And, you know, I look at it now and I tell my kids, I told my wife, our kids are not playing youth football. It's not happening. You know, if I can't keep them from playing football together, I can at least save them from 4 to 6 years of, you know, unnecessary hits. You know, you got this big helmet on with these kids whose necks aren't strong enough to support it, and they're getting knocked all over the place and their heads snapping back. And, you know, I played it, my brother played it, you know, we loved it, but at the same time, it was unnecessary, because, you know, once you get up to middle school, high school age, and you want to play, if you're a good athlete, you'll be able to learn, you know, the ins and outs of it. I just think it's unnecessary. My kids aren't going to play football. If it's up to me, they're not going to play football at all. I just think it's unnecessary. We don't know enough about concussions and the long-term effects, but the information that is out on it now is scary. And to be honest with you, our job as parents are to protect our kids, you know, safety and health. And I'm not going to put my kid in a situation, you know, that his safety and health are going to be jeopardized for a little bit of fun. You know, you can get that competitive advantage through a different sport that's not necessarily as brutal.
No, I think that's important too, because, you know, a lot of people will equate that to football, the concussions to football. And out here, there's a ton of kids that play soccer. And I know your affinity. I know your affinity for soccer and why you wanted nothing to do with me every 4 years during the World Cup. But what the hell is this checkered ball? What are we doing with this? But when they're going up for headers, and not only is that ball coming in sometimes at 20, 22 miles an hour, they're hitting that ball, changing it complete direction with their head. Maybe they're knocking heads with another kid, and, you know, that's an issue too. And, you know, people talk about, oh, this linebacker, he's 300 pounds, he can run a 4.440, and he's coming at you like a freight train. Well, go to hockey and put skates on a guy, and how much faster and how much more impact is he coming in too? So every sport, I mean, right down to gymnastics, and, you know, you're going to hurt yourself. And it goes back to what you said about body control, but
it does. And there's a risk in every sport. But and they say soccer, actually, there's more concussions in soccer than football. But I wonder if that's because there's just so many more kids and people playing soccer around the world.
Yeah, the numbers could be skewed. Yeah.
But I look at it this way. You know, in soccer, you might hit the ball once or twice a game. You know, hockey, you know, you're skating, you might hit 2 or 3 times a game, you know, where it could be a dangerous situation against the boards or something like that. Football, you're getting hit every single play.
Every play.
You know, and when you're growing up and you're one of the better athletes, you're playing every play of the game. You know, I was offense and defense and special teams, and, you know, I'm out there running kamikaze on kickoff.
Yeah.
I'm running back kicks on kick return, and I'm on punt return. Like, you know, you're getting hit.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I look at like, and the mentality was still kind of there. You know, I didn't play a whole lot when I played for Truman, but when I got out on special teams, it's like, this is where I gotta, where I gotta show that I can go. And, yep. You know, you're jumping over piles. You're just running into people, trying to knock them down. You get knocked down or he knocks you down. And that depends if you're going to get in at defensive end or if you're going to get in at tight end. And, you're playing with reckless abandon and not thinking about everything your coaches, and now coaches are probably doing a better job, and you can speak to it more, but I don't remember my coaches telling me, you got to hit with your head up, and you have to have it to the side, and this is how you're going to protect yourself. All I remember hearing, and again, to no fault of their own, because they didn't know, was you got to knock the guy down. You got to break up the pass. You have to hit the quarterback. And we know
so much more now. Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, they taught that technique back then. Certain coaches did. Like, I learned that technique from my dad growing up through youth football, right? Once you got to high school, it was almost kind of, expected that you knew what you were doing. But I will tell you this. I knew how to tackle correctly. Head up, shoulder in and head to the side. And I knew how to do that. I just chose not to. I went out there to, lack of a better phrase, is to go out there and hurt somebody.
Right.
I wanted to prove my dominance. That's the
right.
Looking back at it, man, it makes me cringe. But that I led with my head way too much, and people led with their head into me. I mean, I was a running back, so I got hit quite a bit in high school. I went from quarterback to running back, and I got hit quite a bit. And I think we knew kind of how to tackle. It wasn't preached, that it should be this way. Now
right.
Nowadays, every high school coach that I know, they spend a good deal of time going through the mechanics and fundamentals of how to tackle correctly to alleviate some of those head issues that people have. But, you get knocked down on a good tackle and your head snaps back and hits the ground. Hey, man, that could be a concussion.
Yeah, that's a concussion all day. It doesn't matter what kind of padding your helmet has.
And,
yeah, I mean, you're going to get concussed.
I think leading with your helmet leads to concussion, sure, but it also leads to more serious issues in terms of like neck injuries and things of that nature. And I remember being coached up about that, 30 years ago. I mean, they're talking about the Seattle Seahawks and their hawk roll tackling, how that's this new and innovative way to tackle. And it's not, it's the same technique as they used back in the day.
Right.
They taught back in the day, but nobody chose to do that. Like, because it was like a man's sport, man, you were just going to hit somebody. It wasn't just to hit somebody to get them onto the ground. Like, you wanted to go through that guy.
So you mentioned, and actually I'm real surprised to hear, not real surprised, but I'm pretty happy to hear, because my wife and I made the same decision. Like, they're not going to do impact sports until they really have, like you said, control of their body. But so you decided against youth football for them. I mean, what have you seen change since you played that's good or bad, and what would you change to make it better consider letting them play?
Yeah, in terms of football, at the youth level, I just don't see a lot of positives come out of it. You can teach a kid to play football, through middle school and high school, and be effective if they're a good athlete. These kids can play flag football now, up through like age 12, and I think that's great, because really what it comes down to is, I'm a big proponent of multi-sport athletes. I think it's very important. And what I've seen, in the last, 10 or 15 years, is you see the specialization of sports. Baseball, kids are, playing baseball year-round, and kids are playing, basketball year-round, and they're not playing any other sports. And, in the beginning of those, those kids specializing, you're going to see a pretty big jump in talent and physical ability. But then it eventually starts to plateau, and you start looking at the guys that get picked to play college sports, and the vast majority of those kids were multi-sport athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to body control. It comes down to mastering multiple types of movements, being athletic. That situation, the specialization causes a lot of different issues in terms of the athlete, but it also overuse injuries, the arm injuries. I mean, I think about it this way. I played baseball my whole life, and growing up, we started in, like, you know, the beginning of April and ended in July, and that was it. You know, there wasn't a ton of fall baseball going on. You know, there wasn't any indoor facilities around here that were hosting tournaments, you know, in February. And then I went from July to August, I started throwing a football, right. You know, which is a little bit different movement, you know, but I'm not throwing a baseball. I'm not throwing absolutely as hard as I can every single time. So my arm had time to kind of heal up. I played football, and then once football was over, I played basketball. I mean, I didn't pick a baseball up until the next April.
Baseball,
you know, and I did this year after year after year.
Pitching,
you know?
Pitching seems like it has more strain, on an arm than being a quarterback. I mean, obviously, a quarterback, you have to have precision and you have to have your routine down
right. On
how you deliver the ball. But the different motions from your elbow to your wrist to your shoulder has to be hell on your arm.
Yeah.
And you can attest to that because you played. You said you pitched forever. And you played in college, and part of the reason why you stopped was because of the tendonitis?
No, I partially tore my UCL, you know, which is the – I should have had Tommy John. The doc, the way he explained it, said, hey, it's going to take you a year to get back in terms of being healthy, and then it's going to take you another year for you to really hone your craft again, you know, and get used to the, you know, the new ligament that you got and push the limits. So it was a 2-year process, and you know, I mean, I could throw. I mean, I could have probably played independent ball, made a couple $100 a month, but like at that point, I knew like I'm not gonna be a pro baseball player. You know, I mean, it wasn't in the cards for me. And the doc said it this way: he said, "Hey, you can have Tommy John, and you can, you know, chase that dream, or you don't have to have it right now. It's only partially torn, and you can play catch with your kids when you know you get older."
You beat me to it. I remember having that conversation with you when you decided to stop, and it was one of the most. It was probably the most adult moment of my life at that point, where I'm like, "Wow, man, he doesn't even have kids yet," and like, "What do you go get it?" And then you think about the long term impact. You're like, "Yeah, it was the right call," and you know, here we are again, Corey. Corey being light years ahead of my mental midgetness, but it still sticks with me because there are definitely choices. It's like, do we do this? Because what will the impact be in the future? And
it was a tough decision, Sal. I mean, you know, understanding the mentality of an athlete is you just want to get it fixed and you want to get back out there,
right?
You know, and you know, that was probably the first major decision that I had to make in terms of, you know, my own mortality type of thing. And it was the right decision. I mean, my elbow to this day is, you know, I have issues with it. You know, sometimes I think I should have probably just had the Tommy John and had it fixed. And then, you know, if I didn't get to play anymore, I didn't get to play anymore, but at least it wouldn't be, you know, the way that it is right now.
Right.
You know, I mean, the injuries that I had, I think that it all played a factor in how I am as a coach and how I am as a father. You know, I've had 2 ACL tears and I've had, you know, a half torn UCL with the ligament damage and tore my Achilles, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, which was awful, by the way, that the recovery on that is unbelievable. I have no idea.
What would you have done or what could you have done different playing that you would have done or teach your kids now?
Right. Well, with the ACL situation, you know, it got to the point where I was able to cut left and right, you know, on a dime. And it was like my whole weight was being on one foot. You know what I mean? It was kind of, you think of like Barry Sanders, you know, he would like all of a sudden just cut on the dime. And it isn't all his weight and all that force was going onto one leg. Well, the difference is that Barry Sanders' legs were huge,
yeah.
You know, and he was 5'8". And he was put together very, very well. Yeah. And his body was the perfect type for those types of cuts. And I was 6 foot and, you know, 185 pounds. You know, my legs weren't nearly as big. And when you put that kind of force on certain things, it's going to pop, you know. And for me, we talk a lot about footwork. You know, short, choppy steps, get your cut in, you know, get that momentum down a little bit. Be more quick than fast type of thing. And we work that angle, you know, like these agility ladders. I think it's great for, you know, teaching kids that, you know, muscle memory of kind of chopping your feet, getting quick with them.
Yeah, you mentioned Barry Sanders, you know, those short, choppy steps. And, if that helped, you know, the way he was built, you know, you obviously nobody, there's not a lot of people built like Barry Sanders. So recovering right. is different.
Yeah. And that's what we try to train now is just, you know, try to, every kid's body is a little bit different, but, you know, there's some universal things with muscle memory and you just got to practice, you know, the footwork stuff. We didn't go through that kind of training, you know, when I was playing in high school. You know, it was, you just did it, you know. And I think with my ACL the first time, I remember I took a big step to cut, and it was just too big. And the force of it just tore the ACL, and it dislocated my kneecap. And, you know, when I went down, I remember looking down and seeing my knee. It was not in the right spot.
Ugh.
And I rolled over and it snapped back, which was extremely painful as well. And, you know, I just remember the trauma of that, you know. And so when I coach kids now and when I talk to my sons about, you know, what they're doing, it, you know, I always go in it with the idea that I want to keep them safe. You know, they need to perform, so they got to learn it the right way. So we pay a ton of attention to the fundamentals, you know, of any sport that we're doing, the footwork, you know, how many steps it takes.
How long after you got done playing baseball did you start picking up on coaching? And you're coaching quite a bit too.
Yeah, it was probably less than a year, I would say. I started coaching, I was still in college at that point, so it was, yeah, it was probably less than a year. I went back to my high school, John F. Kennedy. I had a lot to give, I think. You know, my career ended pretty suddenly, but, you know, I was able to learn a lot. You know, being a pitcher in college, there's a lot of downtime, you know, where you can sit in the dugout and you're waiting for your start, you know, 4 days, 5 days later, and you're listening to coaches talk and stuff. And that's when it really kind of hit me, you know. So I coached with them that year as an assistant. I did it for 2 years as an assistant. From there, I went down to the JV to be the JV head coach, and I had the taste of, you know, making the lineups and doing that kind of stuff and managing the game. And I just kind of fell in love with it at that point, you know, just seeing the growth of the kids throughout the course of the season. And you know, that's where kind of based my philosophy of trusting the process and not worrying about the results as much, you know. And, I mean, that idea has been around for a long time, I think, but with social media nowadays, you know, there's so much out there, you know, the leadership part of it, the trusting the process, you know, understanding what the process is. I mean, a lot of us went into the game, hey, we wanted to win, and we would do whatever it took during the game to do that, but now we can break it down into the smaller components where you can stay focused from pitch to pitch and be able to impact games in ways that you probably didn't think you could, you know, and we train that now. You know, and it works out. I think it works out very well. You know, we're going to try to change the culture. We're going to build a respectable program through hard work and taking pride in what we do. So it was a multifaceted effort on fixing the field up to make it respectable and playable. You know, getting the kids excited about baseball again. And, you know, within the 6 years I was at Taylor Kennedy, you know, I think we finished second or third in the league the last 4 years, and then we won back-to-back district championships, you know. And we had a great team coming back the year that I left. And, you know, that situation was tough because I worked in Woodhaven, the Woodhaven-Brownstown School District. I was a teacher there, and the baseball job opened up there. I live in Brownstown, so, like, my kids are going to be coming up through the system. And so, you know, I made a decision based on my family to move from Taylor Kennedy coaching baseball to Woodhaven. And when we got here, it was the same thing. You know, we decided that we needed to change the culture and build a championship mindset. And everything that we did had to have that same philosophy. And that first year, we went 27-8 and won the league championship. You know, the very first year we were here, and the school record for wins leading up to that point in the 42-year history was 17, and we broke it by 10. You know, which was awesome. You know, it was a great situation, and I was proud that we were able to turn around in terms of wins so fast. But you know, there was a lot of work to do still, kind of behind the scenes in terms of changing culture and stuff. So the next year we knew we were losing eight seniors. that were pretty good ball players.
Yeah, Woodhaven and, wasn't really known when we were growing up as a as an athletic power, and it really right. turned around. And to see, again, you talk about that first year, and, you know, I follow it. You know, I live an hour away now. I live in Macomb County, and, you know, we got right. Eisenhower and Dakota and Chippewa up here, and, you know, the Lance Crew schools. But, you know, watching Woodhaven just shoot up through the rankings, I'm like, damn, that Corey, anything that dude touches is gold.
Well, it takes a lot of work, you know, and I have great assistant coaches. You know, I was fortunate enough to have Tony Brinson, the guy that was my JV coach, the head coach that hired me with my first assistant job. He came back and to work with me when we were at Kennedy, and he's our assistant coach now, and he's great, you know, and he adds a whole other level of baseball knowledge. And then I got a great assistant coach and a guy named Joe Dorton. You know, this, he puts so much time and effort into these kids, in the program. And when you have good people working with you, it makes it a little easier because it's not just one guy saying the same message. It's multiple people across your program. All of our coaches, you know, we stress the same things. We put an emphasis on the same mindsets. And that's what, you know, you can see big changes happen very quickly when that is pretty consistent, you know, and we saw that. We take it personally, you know. We want to win just as much as everybody else, but we want to do it in a way that these kids are learning, you know, baseball lessons, but also more importantly, life lessons of how to work hard and how to do the right thing and be consistent with that. And when you do that, you know, anything that you do, if you keep those, you know, those values there, you know, you can be successful. You know, it's not rocket science. It's a formula that, you know, most successful people use, and we've been able to implement it in sports. You know, we've been able to do it with our varsity baseball team, and I've been able to do it with our middle school, you know, basketball teams, both the boys and girls. You know, you just get them to buy into the process and how to focus on that, and the games will take care of itself.
Do they launch their three-pointers from their waist like you did?
Listen, man, my shooting mechanics was not great. You know, we talk about my dad. My dad was a great many things, but he was not a basketball player. So, you know, I had to learn myself how to shoot and do all those things. And that wasn't pretty. Let me tell you, one of the first injuries I've ever had was a sports hernia at 11 years old.
11 years old.
You know, and I couldn't try out the second and third day those tryouts. And I had to have surgery, and, you know, my dad went to talk to the coach to see if there was anything I could do to help out the team. The coach was like, no, we're good. And I remember thinking, like, man, 2 years in a row I got cut. Like, I'm super upset about this situation, you know. And then I worked hard, and then I made it in sixth grade. And I was pretty good in sixth grade, you know. I mean, we had a great team.
We had a good team.
Yeah, we did. We had a great coach, and Coach McKinney. It built the foundation of working hard, because I didn't like that feeling of being told I wasn't good enough, you know.
Right.
And then, listen, it didn't translate well, because in seventh grade, I went out and tried out for that team, and I got cut again, you know. And I remember thinking, like, man, at that point I was like, this might not be for me, you know. This sport might not be for me. And
see,
I
remember
really
that. I remember that too, because I made the seventh grade team, and I couldn't play because I had to go to catechism and practices were on Tuesday. So here right. I am. I made the seventh grade team. And I'm like, oh no, sorry, dude, I got to go to catechism. So the only one of us playing seventh grade basketball was maybe the worst one of us, maybe the least polished of us. But the son bitch got to play.
Right, and you know, part of it too was, you know, the height situation. I was pretty short in seventh grade. I had a big growth spurt between seventh and eighth grade, where I went from like 5'4" to 5'10". And in eighth grade, I tried out and I made the team.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't great. I mean, I played on a really good team. We won the city championship that year.
I can't imagine.
I can see that.
What the hell you guys would have done with me on rollerblades playing wiffle ball.
Listen,
or whatever.
You would have been a YouTube sensation. Like, that's. You had a gift, man. Everything that we did together as kids, you found a way to screw yourself up. Whether it was rollerblades, jumping off a ramp, and then
there was no jumping. There was it was more of a fall instead of a jump.
Yeah, it was totally a fall, you know. But
but thanks for the cover.
It was that you were going to jump and land it. That's what we wanted to do, you know. And you just would just sprawl out everywhere. I mean, there was always an injury, a shoulder here. And, you know, the best thing is, and we talked about it earlier, was playing football behind the rec center in Taylor. You know, I enjoyed that. I mean, that was, you know, that was really fun. But then, you know, you have to go ahead and ruin it for everybody by breaking your hip, you know, like Bo Jackson style.
Hey, man. I still, that pin, that's a badge of honor, that pin in my hip here, bud. I don't have all the scars like you. At least this one I've got.
Yeah, I mean, that was a scary situation, man. That was like, man, he just really messed himself up. And we really didn't play behind that wreck very much after that.
No, no, and you know, that was kind of the end of it. You said something earlier that made me think, like, oh, that's why he didn't play anymore. When you were talking about, like, I learned how to hit and I learned how to play and controlling my body. Dude, we had such a ragtag bunch of people playing behind that rec center. You wanted no part of it. I don't blame you. We would have messed you up good.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, well, it was that. I didn't want, like, someone falling into me and hurting a knee or something like that, you know, which is funny how that ends up happening anyway down the road, playing real football. But, you know, I was worried about that. And then, to be honest with you, it just got to the point where, once I got to a certain level with my athletic ability, it was, I mean, I'd get the ball and I was scoring touchdowns, you know? So it was like, you know, it was tough to play and have a lot of fun doing it, because I was always worried about getting this, you know, little injury because Sean is flailing all over the place and falls into someone's leg, or, you know, you are in your controlled fall situation and land on top of me while I'm at the bottom of the pile. You know, I was just worried, you know, that was going to happen, someone gets tackled along the brick wall, which we've seen numerous times.
Well, yeah, that was the end zone, because why not?
I mean,
you got kids out there playing in jeans, playing in tennis shoes. I remember one, Chucky, we were playing in front of someone's house, and his hand got stuck in someone's jeans pocket. And here I am, you know, big uncontrollable Sal, and we run into his arm and we break his arm. And I still feel sick. I still feel sick for that. And I'm sorry that I was a big clumsy ox when we were playing.
I don't know if kids get to have that same experience now. You know, I mean, we were out till the streetlights were on, type of thing.
Past.
You know,
past
the streetlights.
I knew to go
home when my dad got out the front door and whistled, and I could hear that thing from like six blocks away. You know, and like, I gotta go, dude. You know, everybody's like, you know what? I think it's time to go too. You know.
Yeah, but
these kids don't have that.
No, they don't. I don't think they want it either, because I drive around and nobody's messing around in their front yards, or nobody's, you know, playing ball or whatever. It's just, and I get it, it's a cultural thing, and I don't want to sound, you know, like an old man, but damn it, we had fun. It was so much fun. I would much rather do that than hang out on my phone or my tablet or, you know, whatever. But
and there's some people out there that think that, you know, because the kids are not out playing as much as they used to, and a lot of that has to do with video games and the society in itself. I don't let my kids out of my sight on my street, you know. I'm deathly afraid of something happening.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, you know, we were all over that neighborhood, and sometimes we rode our bikes to different cities, and our parents had no clue.
Corey, how many times did I go to the movie theater, which was, you know, 3-4 miles away, or going to the mall, or going to the airport,
right,
you know, like, on your bike and just going, and, you know, the biggest adventures were like, oh, we're going to Copper Tree. No, you're not going to Copper Tree. Oh, yeah, man, it's going down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we were there all the time, you know. But I think that part of that is with the kids not playing as much outside, you know, it does play a factor in, you know, injuries that we've seen in sports, I especially at the youth levels. I truly believe that, you know. And there's they need to get out and they need to move. You know, kids need that. And for anything else other than maybe, you know, learning a couple of the body movements to keep yourself safe, like how to fall, you know.
Yep.
That's an understated skill, you know. How do you fall without breaking something over and over again? And some kids, you know, nowadays, they kind of lack that skill. I see it on the playground. You know, my wife sees it when she's out at recess, and these kids are, you know, there's no controlled falls, as we used to call, you know, sales stuff back in the day, you know. These kids are just like smacking faces off of concrete because they don't know how to put their hand down front.
You know what else?
Little things like that.
You know what else kids don't do? They don't throw snowballs, allegedly, through people's houses either.
No, they don't. You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I was just thinking about that, you know, that situation. And because my kids, they have this impulse issue, you know, and I'm like, you got to think before you do something. And
imagine that.
The pot calling the kettle black.
Imagine that.
You know, we get off the bus stop. We're throwing snowballs all over the place. We see this huge window. I think it was on Maple Lawn at the time. We throw it across the street, and we hit this, and it makes this huge boom. And it doesn't break. You know, it's like a newer window, you know, double, you know, it's new. And So it's not breaking. So we decided to walk, you know, down Sean Street, and that corner house, man, they were, you know, I didn't even think about it. It was not new windows. It was the same windows that were in that house when it was built. And I just chucked the snowball at the bay window just like I did the other house, and this one shattered.
Would we have won the 4x100 relay in the Olympics that year?
Oh, for sure. I've never seen you run so fast. You know, your strides were, it was like Usain Bolt, dude.
That was peak sale. That was definitely peak sale.
Yeah. I mean, and you, I think you ran to Danny's house or something like that. And me and Sean hid behind his garage for a second. That dude got in his car and he flew down the street and pulled into Sean, you know, Sean's driveway. And it was a mess, man. That was a big situation. That guy was extremely upset. That situation, I learned a lot from that, let me tell you.
How to throw a curve?
Start throwing some change-ups a little bit, you know? it was a tough situation. But you know what? Getting back to it, our neighborhood was awesome. I mean, we had kids on every street. We played all kinds of games, whether it was jumping off trampolines that was propped up on car blocks or whatever, car ramps, and how dangerous was that, you know?
Yeah, but you had to do the dunk. You had to get the dunk done. Even if your rim was torn, bent, and oval, we had to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that trampoline served us very well for a while. I mean, we had all kinds of dunks, you know, the Corey's Cuff, Corey's Shawnee Cuff. Reverse, you know,
The feminine hygiene named ones. Yeah, I remember those ones too.
Yeah, the Monistat 7.
Well, I can do the Monistat 5. Oh!
It was unbelievable, dude. I look at that and it's like, man, we really were like the last generation that was able to do all those things. You know, it was fun.
It was. I wouldn't give it back for anything. I wouldn't let my kids do any of it, but I wouldn't give it back for anything.
No, not at all. I mean, that's I think that's where parenting comes in, you know, like, hey, do as I say, not as I do type of stuff, you know. But knowing that we went through all that stuff, I think it makes us better parents because we kind of see, like, I remember what my thought process was, and I see it in my kids when they start to do something, and I'm like, I'm warning them, hey, don't do this now, don't do this, like, make sure that this you do it this way. And a lot of it has to do with because I already screwed that up.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of funny that way too. It's you know, I'll watch my daughter and she'll put together her thought process and she'll start to phrase her sentence or start to phrase her plan, and I'll say, nope, you know why? Because I invented that. I know what you're doing. It's not going to happen because it doesn't end well.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's a fine line parenting, isn't it? Like you want to keep them safe, but you know that they have to make their own mistakes.
Yep.
To grow from it, you know. So as long as the mistake isn't, you know, causing bodily harm to themselves or anybody else, I mean, you know, I kind of wait to see how it plays out. And a lot of times it's hilarious. And I got to hold back laughs before I, you know, try to parent them up. But it's, you know, it's a fine line for sure.
Corey, do you still sleep with the window open in the middle of the winter?
Occasionally I do. My wife is not a big fan of that.
No.
Obviously.
No, neither was I. Cold as hell. Your nickname, Sub-Zero. I wish I would have stuck a little bit longer, but it was cold as hell freshman year, man. You know, I was on the top bunk, so that's where the heat goes, and we were, you know, whatever. But you were on the bottom. You were right there by the window, and I'm sure Eastern didn't have their rooms insulated. For Christ's sakes, it was cinder block walls. My man still has his window open.
Ben Franklin did that. You know, he would sleep with the windows open in the dead of winter. He said the fresh air was rejuvenating, you know, and that's my excuse. If Ben Franklin can do it, then it's okay for me to do it.
I'll let you have that. Corey, I could sit here forever. We're gonna wrap this up though. You're definitely coming back. I could absolutely see this being a regular thing. Thank you so much. What do you got to plug? Where are you at online? Any social media? Any coaching? Any schools? Anything you got to plug?
Yeah, you know, I'm at Coach Farner on Twitter, and you know, I post a lot of you know, coaching and teaching things down there. You know, and we kind of update how we do with our baseball season, which is coming up this year. You know, we're going to be pretty solid, I think, across the board. And there's a lot of good stuff on that. And you can, anytime they want to email me, I'm at coachfarner19@gmail.com. You know, I have no problem talking with everybody and, you know, about what we do and how we do it. And you know, it's been great. I mean, you got a network, right? So, you know, that's what I do. I network with coaches and with people that want to know, you know, what we do and how we do it so they can help their kids.
That's great. That's awesome. Corey, good luck with every season that you got coming up. Good luck with staying injury free for the duration of whatever it is you got going on. no more ACLs, dude, until they can find some sort of synthetic metal replacement for you that will not self-destruct. Good luck with that. Corey, thanks, and we'll see you guys next time.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yep. I want to thank everybody again for tuning in to the second episode, and thank everybody that listened to the first one. Coming up next, I'm going to have another great friend of mine. We're going to veer away from sports. We're going to talk a lot about music and probably about wrestling. So until then, thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow Corey. He gave all that info at the end. And until next time, we'll see ya. Thanks.